miles, maybe. 5, tops. Pulling out a map, Mitch pinpointed the spot where Burns' van was abandoned. With a red Sharpie, he drew a circle around the van at a 5-mile radius. There was only one town inside the circle. The old man waved his frail arms excitedly. Mitch Connors fought back the urge to laugh.
He looks like Yoda having a seizure.
I told him she was here, but they just poo-pooed me. Reckon an old man like me don't know what he saw. Dead of night she shows up, dead of night. No suitcase. I told him. I said she didn't have no case. That ain't right. But did anybody listen to me? No, sir.
It turned out Richardsville had only the one motel. When Mitch called up and mentioned Grace Brookstein's name, the proprietor of the Up All Night had gone ballistic. Yes, Grace had been there. He'd already told the police. Didn't those bozos speak to each other?
I hope you're gonna fire that officer, McKinley. Arrogant little piece of S-H-I-T. Excuse my language, detective, but I told him.
Mitch turned to the technician sweeping the room for prints. The technician shook his head.
Clean as a whistle, boss. Sorry, if she were here, she did a good job covering her tracks.
The old man looked like his grizzled head might explode.
What do you mean, if she was here? Ain't no if she was here. How many more times do I gotta tell you people? Grace Brookstein was here.
I'm sure she was, sir, said Mitch. But she's not here now. Another dead end.
How about my reward? Man on the TV said $200,000.
We'll be in touch. There were messages waiting for Mitch back at the station.
Your wife called,
the surgeon on the desk told him. Ex-wife, Mitch corrected her.
Whatever. She was yelling something about your kids' school play. She wasn't a happy camper.
Mitch groaned. Damn it. Celeste's play. Was that today? Mitch had sworn up and down he'd be there, but with all the excitement of the last 48 hours, he'd totally forgotten. I'm the worst father in the world, and the worst cop. Someone should give me a medal. Guiltily, he began punching his old home number into his cell when the desk sergeant interrupted him.
One more thing, sir. A guy was here earlier. He said he had information about Grace Brookstein. Said he knew her. He wanted to talk to you, but he wouldn't wait.
Well, did you get his details?
She shook her head.
He wouldn't tell me anything. He said he'd wait for you in this bar until 6.
She handed Mitch a dirty piece of paper with an address scrawled on it. Mitch sighed. It was probably another crank. On the other hand, the bar was only a couple of blocks away. And anything was preferable to facing Helen's wrath or hearing the disappointment in Celeste's voice. The clock on the wall said 10 of 6. At 6 o'clock exactly, Mitch walked into the bar just as a good-looking, dark-haired man with hawk-like nose was walking out. When Mitch saw there were no other customers, he ran back onto the street and caught up with him.
Hey, was it you who wanted to see me? I'm Detective Connors.
The dark-haired man looked at his watch. You're late. Mitch was irritated. Who does this dickhead think he is?
Look, buddy, I don't have time for games, okay? Do you have information for me, or don't you?
You know, you might want to be a little more polite to me. Your ass is on the line, Connors, and I can save it. For a price, of course. I know where Grace Brookstein's going to be at noon tomorrow. If you're nice to me, real nice, I'll take you to her. Celeste Connors cried herself to sleep that night. Her daddy never called.
Chapter 20. Davy Bucola paced his hotel room like a caged tiger. His suite at the Paramount on Times Square was luxurious. Fret bed linen, sleek modern furniture, $500 cashmere blankets draped casually over the back of the armchair. Davy thought, this'd be an impressive place to bring a woman. Unfortunately, he wasn't with a woman. He was with a bunch of cops, and they were starting to make him nervous.
Stand still, please, Mr. Bucola. We need to check your wire.
Davy lit a cigarette, his third in as many minutes.
Again?
Yes, again.
Mitch Connors was in a pissy mood.
You want to see that 200 grand, Mr. Bucola. I suggest you cooperate.
Davy thought, he's probably nervous too. Doesn't want anything to go wrong. Davy felt bad doing the dirty on Grace Brookstein. He'd always liked her. What's more, he was convinced she was innocent of the crimes she'd been convicted of. But $200,000... $200,000! He tried to rationalize the decision to himself. He was protecting Grace. This way she would be captured unharmed. He hadn't told Connors or any of the cops about the information he'd uncovered either. Later, once Grace was safe, he'd use it to launch an appeal against her conviction and reopen the inquest into Lenny's death. Either that or sell it. What would Vanity Fair pay for a scoop like this? If he was lucky, he might double his reward money. Of course, deep down, Davy Bucola knew the truth. He was betraying an innocent woman for money, the same way everybody else had betrayed her. It wasn't $200,000. It was 30 pieces of silver.
Mr. Bucola, are you with us?
Davy looked up, startled.
Mitch Connors was shouting at him again.
We only have an hour. Let's run through the plan one more time.
Grace dipped her donut into the hot black coffee and took a big, satisfying bite.
Delicious.
She and Lenny used to have the finest chefs on staff at all their homes, ready to prepare lobster thermidor or whip up a Gruyere souffle at any hour of the day or night. But not until this week had Grace tasted a Dunkin' donut. She couldn't imagine how she'd ever lived without them. The week had been full of new experiences.
The familiarity she felt when she first came back to New York had been replaced by a sort of delighted wonder. It was the same city she'd lived in, on and off, for her entire life. And yet it was completely different. This New York, the New York of the ordinary people, of the poor, was like another planet to Grace, with its subway trains, its dirty buses, its donut shops, its walk-ups and shared bathrooms and television sets with wire coat hangers jammed into the top. Lenny had always told Grace it was terrible to be poor.
Poverty is the most degrading, most soul-destroying state into which the human soul can sink.
Grace disagreed.
True, she had never been poor before, but then Lenny had never been to prison.
Grace had. She knew what soul-destroying meant. She knew what it was to be degraded, to be robbed of one's humanity. Poverty didn't come close.
By all objective standards, the hotel in Queens where Grace had been staying was a dump. Dirty, cramped, with depressing mustard-colored walls and linoleum floors.
But Grace had come to enjoy the smell of fried onions wafting up from the hot dog stand outside her window and the ridiculous arguments between the couples across the hall. It made her feel less alone. As if she were part of something. Getting dressed this morning, preparing for her meeting with Davy, she actually thought, I'll be sorry to leave here. But she couldn't stay. For one thing, it wasn't safe. She had to keep moving. More important, the time had come to begin her mission. Armed with Davy's information, she could at last begin her journey.
Today, her vengeance would take flight.
She had dressed simply for the rendezvous. Jeans, sneakers, a black polo neck sweater, and a down jacket, her beanie hat pulled low over her newly darkened hair. The jeans already felt a little tighter on the waist than they had in Richardsville. Grace was gaining weight, a side effect of her newfound donut addiction. Swallowing the dregs of her coffee, she looked at her watch. 11 o'clock. She headed for the subway.
Mitch Connors hadn't slept. The plan was simple. Davy had arranged to meet Grace at noon exactly in front of Toys R Us on Times Square. At that time of day, the New York landmark should be crawling with shoppers looking for a bargain in the winter sales, as well as the usual backpack-laden hordes of tourists. Mitch had positioned two men behind Davy, inside the store, another two at the entrance to the subway, and six more scattered throughout the crowd. All 10 would be in plain clothes, wired and armed. Mitch wasn't expecting any trouble, but after the way Grace had dealt with that scumbag Tommy Burns, he wasn't taking any chances. As soon as Davy saw Grace in the crowd, he would use his hidden mic to alert the cops, who would close in around her. Once she reached Davy and shook his hand, that was a signal to move in and grab her. Easy. Mitch himself would be watching the proceedings from the Paramount Hotel. His face had been all over the news for weeks. If Grace saw him, she'd know something was up. Davy Bucola lit another cigarette. 11:45. Time to go downstairs. Davy looked on in alarm as one of the cops checked his gun before slipping it back into the holster under his jacket.
What's that for? You aren't gonna hurt her, are you?
The cop looked at Davy like something he'd just scraped off his shoe. He'd given them good information, but he was a snitch. Nobody liked a snitch.
I'm sure Mrs. Brookstein would be touched by your concern. Are you ready?
Davy nodded. $200,000. My own place.
I'm ready. Let's go.
10 to 12. Do you see her?
Davy Bucola stamped his feet against the cold. Resisting the urge to put his hand to his ear, he hated wires. He murmured, negative. Not yet. Times Square was even more crowded than he'd expected. Toys R Us was jammed.
Half of New York was out of work, but people would rather starve than see their kids go without the latest Hannah Montana doll or Special Agent Oso flashlight. Sad, really, Davy reflected. The woman opposite Grace was staring. Grace felt her stomach flip over.
Hey!
The train was crowded, but no one was talking. The woman's voice rang out like a foghorn.
Hey! I'm talking to you!
Grace looked up. She felt the blood rush to her face.
She recognizes me. Oh, God! She's going to say something. They'll turn on me. The whole train will turn on me. And they'll rip me to shreds.
You done with your paper?
Paper?
Grace looked down. There was a New York Post in her lap. She had no idea how it had gotten there. Wordlessly, she handed it over.
Thanks.
Suddenly, the train jerked to a halt. The lights flickered, then went out. Everybody groaned. The lights came on again. Grace looked at her watch. 5 to 12.
Forget it, the man next to her said genially. Wherever you're going, you're gonna be late.
A voice came over the address system.
We apologize for the inconvenience. Due to some electrical problems, we expect a short delay.
No, not today. Why today?
Grace took a deep breath. She couldn't draw attention to herself by appearing jittery. Besides, it was okay. They said a short delay. Davy would wait. As he stared out of the window, Mitch's heart sank.
She's not coming.
He had been so sure this was it, so certain. The clock on the wall taunted him. 10 after 12. What could have gone wrong? Had Bucola had a change of heart and tipped her off? Had Grace realized she couldn't trust him? Or maybe it was worse than that. Maybe something had happened to her. An accident. Someone had recognized her and taken the law into his own hands.
I think I see her.
Bucola's voice sounded crackly in Mitch's earpiece.
You think? Don't you know?
Bucola didn't answer.
Well, where?
Mitch couldn't hide his excitement.
She just came out of the subway. I didn't get a good look at her face. It might not be her.
Danny. Uka.
Did you guys see anything?
Two of Mitch's men were right outside the subway, checking out every woman who emerged.
Nope. Nothing.
Jesus. What was she wearing, Davy?
Jeans. Dark coat. A hat, I think.
Shit.
What? I lost her.
You lost her? Well, was she heading toward you? Did she see you?
Forget it. It wasn't her.
Grace darted out of the subway onto the street. She was late. Very late. Would Davy have waited this long? God, she hoped so. He was taking a big risk agreeing to meet her at all. She pushed forward into the crowds, head down. The multicolored lettering of the Toys R Us store called to her from across the square. Grace headed toward it, scanning the throng for her friend's familiar face. Officer Luca Bonetti was disappointed, so much for being part of the big show.
Grace Brookstein had obviously made other plans. Still, getting paid to eye up women wasn't the worst way to spend a morning. A cute brunette in a hurry brushed past him. "Hey, babe, how you doing?" He tapped her on the ass, but she hurried on.
"What is your problem, Benetti?"
His partner was mad.
"We're supposed to be looking for America's most wanted, not harassing members of the public."
"Aw, lighten up, Danny. She were cute. And in case you haven't figured it out, Lady Brookstein ain't coming."
Grace's heart was pounding. Asshole. After what that bastard van driver had done to her, the thought of a man touching her or even looking at her sexually made her want to scream to the top of her lungs. But she couldn't scream. She couldn't stop and yell at the guy to get his stinking hands off of her. She had to be invisible, to melt into the crowd. Where the hell is Davy? Just as she thought the words, she saw him. He was standing a few feet in front of the store. She walked toward him, smiling. Sensing her smile, Davy looked up. That's when Grace noticed.
"It's her. I see her. She's heading over. Jeans, dark jacket, beanie."
Mitch asked the cops in the square.
"Have you got her?"
"Yes, sir. We see her. Closing in."
Grace's mind raced.
"He said he'd have the file with him. The evidence. Why didn't he bring it?"
Something was wrong. It wasn't just the file. It was Davy's face. It had guilt written all over it. Just then, two men brushed past Grace, heading towards Toys R Us. Some sixth sense made her slow her pace. Cops. It's a setup. There was no time to think. Acting on instinct, she whipped off her hat and stuffed it into her coat pocket. A group of foreign school children was heading in the opposite direction, back toward the subway. Grace slipped in among them, another small, dark fish entering the safety of the shoal. The men clutched at their earpieces. Up in the hotel room, Mitch Connors was yelling bloody murder.
"Where is she? Where is she?"
"I don't know."
Davy Bucola was confused.
"She was coming right for me, and then she disappeared."
Mitch could have wept.
"Spread out, all of you. Keep looking. She's in that crowd."
He couldn't take it any longer. He ran out of the hotel room and headed for the stairs. From the sixth floor of the Paramount, Mitch had had a bird's-eye view of the square below. Now, running outside at street level, he could barely see 3 feet in front of his nose. There were people everywhere, jostling their bulky shopping bags, pushing their kids' strollers across his path. Jeans, dark jacket, beanie hat. She's here. She must be. He pushed into the heaving mass of bodies. Grace was almost at the subway. The stone steps beckoned her, promising safety, escape.
"Just a few more seconds, a few more steps."
She glanced to her right. A man in a Yankees cap was looking around him frantically, muttering to himself.
"One of the cops. How many are there?"
The man was heading straight for Grace's group. Now he was stopping their tour guide, asking him something.
"I have to break away."
Suddenly, Grace saw the sleazeball who had pawed her earlier. He was still hanging around the entrance to the subway. On closer inspection, she could see he was a young Italian,
attractive if you liked assholes. Not that Grace would have cared if he looked like Quasimodo. She walked in his direction. Mitch held his breath. There she is. The crowd moved almost imperceptibly, and he saw her, not 15 feet away from where she was standing. She was tiny, maybe 5 feet tall, in jeans and a dark coat, and she almost had reached the subway. Mitch broke into a run.
Hey, buddy, look where you're going! Slow down, jerk!
Mitch ran on blindly, knocking pedestrians off their feet. As Grace reached the steps, Mitch made a lunge for her, rugby tackling her to the ground, face down. She screamed, but it was too late. Blood gushed from her nose. Mitch snapped a pair of handcuffs on her wrists. It was over.
Grace Brookstein, you're under arrest. You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to an attorney.
Turning her over, he pulled the beanie hat up to get a better look at her face.
Oh, Jesus.
A terrified blonde stared back at him. Mitch had never seen her before in his life. Luca Bonetti couldn't believe his luck.
Hey, sexy, you're back.
I'm back.
The gorgeous brunette stood up on tiptoes, wrapped her arms around his neck, and started kissing him passionately. Luca returned the favor. This time he got both hands on her ass. Out of the corner of her eye, Grace saw the cop with a Yankee hat, still talking to the tour guide.
He's probably describing me.
If she looked like she were part of a couple, it would throw them off the scent. This bozo could be her cover till she got safely on a train. Then she'd jump off at the next station and lose him. She broke off the kiss and smiled at him.
Wanna take a ride with me?
Luca grinned. Do I ever? He's busy. Another man, older, with a thick salt and pepper mustache, had appeared out of nowhere and looked daggers at Grace.
He's busy.
Luca Bonetti protested.
No, I'm not. Give me a break, Danny, would you?
Give you a break?
The man turned to Grace.
Look, lady, we're NYPD and we're on a job, so get the hell out of here before I book you for soliciting.
Grace felt the bile rise up in her throat.
He's one of them.
Her legs started to shake. She ran. It took Mitch a few moments to react. He was apologizing to the young woman whose nose he had just broken when the girl tore past him, two steps at a time. Turning back to the woman, Mitch started removing her handcuffs when he saw it. A gray woolen beanie hat sticking out of the girl's coat pocket.
Stop! He yelled. Police!
Grace was on the platform. Behind her, she could hear the shouting.
Police, let me through!
The train was packed. Grace tried to force her way into a car, but a man pushed her back.
Use your eyes, lady. There's no room here. Move down! Police!
The shouts were getting louder. Grace looked back over her shoulder. It was him, Detective Connors. She recognized his face from the TV reports. The next car was also full. People had started moving back, waiting for the next train. There was no space on this one. The electric doors whooshed shut. It was too late. The train started to move away.
Grace Brookstein, stay where you are. You're under arrest.
Grace heard her name. So did everybody else. Suddenly, hundreds of pairs of eyes were swiveling around, scanning the platform. Grace Brookstein, where? Is she here? Mitch Connors was sprinting along the platform faster than the train. He ran past the first car, then the second. As he reached the thirds, the crowds parted. Mitch and Grace were face to face. Grace looked into Mitch's eyes, and Mitch looked into hers. The hunter and the prey. For a moment, something passed between them. Mutual respect, affection, even. But only for a moment. The train was gaining speed. Safe in the warmth of the carriage, Grace turned away from the window. Mitch Connors stood on the platform and watched her disappear into the oblivion of the tunnel. Back at the station, Lieutenant Dubray lost it. What the fuck? How could you lose her like that? How?
I don't know, sir, Mitch sighed. He tried to look on the bright side. They knew more than they did 48 hours ago. They knew Grace was still in New York. They knew she was a brunette now and that she'd gained weight. Tomorrow they'd issue a new photo fit picture to the media. Thanks to Luca Bonetti, the NYPD's crack surveillance team had managed to gather one other new piece of information. America's Most Wanted Woman was a terrific kisser. Chapter 21. For 3 days, Grace lay low. She found a new place to stay, another studio, this time in Brooklyn. Where the room in Queens had been shabby but welcoming, this place could only be described as squalid. Grace didn't care. She drew the curtains, locked the door, and crawled into bed. Depression washed over her in slow, lapping waves. This is worse than prison. This is hell. In prison, Grace had had Karen and Cora. There was Sister Agnes and the kids at the center. Visits from Davy Bucola. Davy. Grace ought to be used to betrayal by now, but what Davy had done shocked her to the core. She'd really believed he was on her side. More important, he held the key to all her hopes of finding Lenny's killer. Grace had put her faith in another human being for the last time. The only person I trust is gone forever, betrayed and murdered for his money. The way she felt now, Grace wouldn't have trusted her own shadow. She wept. When she could cry no more, she got dressed. For the first time in 3 days, she went out. It was a crazy risk. Insane. But Grace didn't care. Cypress Hills Cemetery in Brooklyn overlooked Jamaica Bay. It was non-denominational, although much of its upkeep in recent years had been funded by Jewish charities. Grace remembered the outcry when Lenny's remains were buried there. That son of a bitch betrayed the Jewish community. We trusted him because he was one of us. Now he wants to rest among us? No way. Eli Silfen, head of the Beth Olam Benevolent Fund, was particularly strident. A memorial to Lenny Brookstein? At Cypress Hills? Over my dead body. But Rabbi Geller had stood firm. A soft-spoken, deeply spiritual man, Rabbi Geller had known Letty for most of his life.
Actually, Eli, it will be over his. This is a religion of forgiveness, of mercy. It's for God to judge, not man.
Grace had never forgotten the rabbi's compassion. She wished he were here now as she picked her way through the gravestones and angel statues, her breath white in the freezing winter air. The cemetery was huge. Tens of thousands of graves, maybe more, stretching as far as the eye could see.
I'll never find it. Not without help.
An elderly groundskeeper was tending to a plot a few yards away. Grace approached him.
Excuse me. I was wondering, are there any notable people buried here?
It seemed safer than asking outright. The old man laughed, revealing a mouthful of rotten teeth.
Any? How long have you got? It's like People magazine down there.
He banged the frozen earth with his hoe, cackling again at his own joke.
We got Mae West, Jackie Robinson. We got some bad pennies, too. Wild Bill Lovett. Know who that is?
Grace didn't.
He was a gangster. A killer. Leader of the White Hand Gang.
I'm sorry. I don't know much about criminals, said Grace, forgetting that officially, at least, she was one.
We got one criminal here I bet you know about. Leonard Brookstein. Mr. Quorum.
You heard of him, ain't you?
Grace blushed.
Yes. Yes, I have. Do you know where he's buried?
Sure do.
He started to walk. Grace kept pace with him for almost 10 minutes, the two of them, like a pair of drill sergeants, inspecting a parade ground of silent, wintry dead, the gravestones standing to attention like soldiers. Eventually, they reached the top of a hill. Grace froze. Less than 200 yards ahead, two armed policemen stood yawning beside a simple white stone. Or at least, it had once been simple and white. Even from here, Grace could see it had been covered with graffiti, blood-red messages of hate that no one had bothered to erase.
Of course there are cops here. They're probably waiting for me to make a stupid mistake. Like this.
What's the matter? Asked the groundskeeper. We ain't there yet, you know.
I know. I've changed my mind.
Grace's heart was pounding.
I don't feel well. Thank you for your help.
He looked at her strangely, studying her features as if for the first time. Hoping to distract him, Grace hurriedly pressed a 20 into his arthritis-stiff hand, then turned and fled back down the hill. She didn't stop running till she reached the subway, slipping into a nearby cafe to catch her breath and collect herself. How could people deface a man's grave? What sort of a person did that? She'd been too far away to read any of the graffiti, but she could imagine the poisonous things that had been written. Her eyes brimmed with tears. None of them knew Lenny. What a decent, loving, generous man he had been. Sometimes, even Grace felt that that man was slipping away from her. That the reality of who Lenny was had already been lost, crushed beneath a mountain of lies and envy and loathing. People called him wicked, but it was a lie.
You weren't wicked, my darling. It's this world that's wicked, wicked and greedy and corrupt.
In that moment, Grace realized that she had a choice. She could give up, turn herself in,
accept the rotten hand of lies that life had dealt her. Or she could fight. Rabbi Geller's words came back to her. It's for God to judge, not man. Perhaps Grace should leave the crushing of her enemies to God. Let him right the wrongs the world has done to her and to her darling Lenny? Perhaps not. Grace knew what her next move would be. Davy Bucola fumbled with the key to his hotel room. He was very, very drunk. When Grace slipped through his fingers, so did the money. He'd betrayed her, and she knew it, and it had all been for nothing. Too depressed to face going home to his mother's house, Davy had hung around the city, spending what was left of his savings on strippers and booze.
Stupid fucking thing.
He tried the key again twice before it dawned on him. I'm on the wrong floor. As he staggered back down the hall to the elevator, the walls lunged toward him and the floor moved up and down, like a ship on the high seas. Davy remembered the funhouse at the Atlantic City amusement park his dad used to take him to as a kid. He felt nauseous. It was a relief to step into the elevator. What floor? The woman had her back to him. Even in his drunken state, the PI in Davy took note of her long auburn hair and shiny black trench coat. Or was it two trench coats? What floor? She asked again. Davy couldn't remember. Third, he guessed. The woman reached forward and pressed a button. Then she pressed a gun into the small of Davy's back. Make a move, and I will kill you. Up in his hotel room, Davy sat on the edge of the bed, stone cold sober.
I know how it looks, but I can't explain.
Grace raised the gun and pointed it directly at his head.
I'm listening.
Getting hold of a gun was a lot easier than Grace had thought it would be. She'd assumed it would be a complicated, dangerous process, but it turned out you could buy them on the street. Like chestnuts. She'd noticed the man loitering in the alleyway, exchanging money with neighborhood kids in what Grace assumed must be drug deals. Yesterday afternoon, she walked right up to him.
I need a gun. Do you know anyone who can help me?
The guy looked Grace over. With her shaven head and baggy masculine clothes, he put her down as a dyke, probably fresh out of prison. He wasn't a fan of carpet munchers, as a rule. On the other hand, she certainly wasn't a cop, and he could use the money.
That depends. How much you paying?
They agreed on a price that was twice what the pistol was worth. He instantly regretted not having held out for more. As Grace walked away, he called after her.
Do you know how to use that thing?
Grace stopped, thought about it, shook her head.
$50. I'll give you a private lesson. I'll even throw in some ammo. How's that?
20.
Grace was amazed to hear herself saying.
35. That's my final offer.
Deal.
Oh, God, Grace, please, don't shoot.
Davy Bucola was sobbing. Grace felt oddly detached. It was almost distasteful listening to him beg for his life. Rivers of tears and mucus streaming down his contorted, terrified face, as if any words of his could change her decision.
Give me the file.
The file?
The information you promised me. The information you were going to give me in Times Square. Remember? Before you got greedy and decided to turn me in for 200 grand.
It wasn't like that, Grace. I was trying to protect you.
Grace moved her index finger over the trigger.
One more lie out of your mouth, and I swear to God I will blow your head off.
Davy whimpered with fear. She meant it. This was not the Grace Brookstein he'd met at Bedford Hills. This was a totally different person. Cold. Ruthless. Reckless.
There is a file, isn't there, Davy? I hope for your sake you weren't lying about that as well.
No, it's here. I have it.
He'd missed out on the reward, but Davy had still hoped to find a bidder for his gold mine of secrets. So far, no magazine editors had taken his call, but he was working on it. He reached under the bed.
Stop!
Grace commanded. Davy froze.
Keep your hands where I can see them, on top of your head.
Davy did as he was asked.
Good. Now walk into the middle of the room and kneel down.
Davy felt his stomach turn to liquid.
Oh, God. The classic execution pose. She's going to put a bullet in the back of my neck.
Please, Grace!
Be quiet.
Cautiously, keeping the gun trained on Davy, Grace squatted down on her haunches and reached under the bed herself. She pulled out a brown manila folder.
Is this it?
Davy nodded.
Once you were safe, I was going to take it to a lawyer. I swear to God, I would have helped you launch an appeal.
Grace pressed the folder to her chest like a lover. Then she released the safety catch on the gun.
Have you shown this to anyone? The police or the press?
Davy shook his head vehemently.
No one. The only people that know this exists are you and I.
It was the right answer. Grace smiled. Davy felt relieved.
She's going to let me live.
Grace picked up a pillow from the bed. Holding it in front of the gun, she said coolly,
"You betrayed me. Do you know what the punishment is for traitors, Davy?"
Before he could answer, he heard the muffled sound of the shot, followed by a warm, wet sensation in his lower body. After that, there was nothing. Mitch Connors surveyed the scene. The hotel maid who had made the call had such poor English and was so terrified and hysterical he hadn't known what to expect. But it definitely wasn't this. Despite himself, Mitch burst out laughing.
It's not funny!
David Bucola was in the middle of the room, naked, and trussed up like a chicken with the cord from the window blinds. Literally, like a chicken. After he'd passed out, someone, Grace, had tarred and feathered him. Feathers from the hotel pillows had been stuck to his limbs with hair gel, and the word traitor written across his forehead in permanent marker. The same permanent marker, Mitch presumed, that was sticking out of Davy's asshole now like a poultry thermometer.
From where I'm standing, buddy, it is a little funny.
Mitch was starting to like Grace more and more. A single bullet was lodged in the wall next to the window. Below it,
In a pile on the floor lay Davy's soiled clothes. Bucola must have been so terrified when Grace fired the shot into the pillow he'd lost control of his bowels.
"She's psychotic,"
Davy sobbed.
"She could have killed me. I want police protection."
"Yeah, and I want Giselle Bundchen to lick whipped cream off my balls, but it ain't gonna happen," said Mitch wryly. "Untie him, somebody, would you? If I have to look at that ass crack for one more second, I'm gonna need some serious therapy. I may never eat chicken again."
"Shouldn't we take some pictures first, boss? Document the crime scene?"
"Who for?" Mitch laughed even harder. "Colonel Sanders?"
"You're not taking this seriously."
Davy Bucola did his best to sound indignant, not an easy thing to do with a Sharpie stuck up your ass.
"Grace Brookstein threatened me at gunpoint. That's armed robbery, don't you care?"
"About you, Bucola? No, I don't care. And what do you mean, armed robbery? Robbery of what? What did she steal?" Davy hesitated. "Either you tell me or I'm gonna leave you here like this."
"If I tell you, will you give me police protection?"
Mitch walked over to the door.
"Wait!"
Davy yelped.
Okay. There was a file. Information about her husband's death. We believe that Lenny Brookstein was murdered."
"What?"
"I was working with Grace, investigating the case. That's why she broke out of Bedford. She doesn't care about the money. All she wants is to find who killed her husband, who set her up. She wants vengeance."
Mitch could understand about wanting vengeance. He thought back to the day Grace had called him.
"I didn't steal any money, detective. I was framed, and so was my husband."
Was it possible? "Why the hell didn't you tell me this earlier?" he shouted. But as soon as he said the words, he knew the answer. "You were going to sell the information, weren't you? You greedy little shit." Davy Bucola was silent. "So you gave her the file?"
"I had to. She had a gun."
"You have a copy, right? Tell me you have a copy." Less than 3 miles away, Grace lay in a bathtub, rereading Davy's information for the 100th time. Suddenly, she sat bolt upright. There it was, in black and white. "I know who killed Lenny." At last, the hunt was on.
Chapter 22. Andrew Preston walked down Wall Street with a familiar feeling of tightness in his chest. Maria was in the throes of a new affair. He knew the signs by now. The bedside drawer was stuffed with receipts from La Perla, the Brazilian bikini wax she booked after their Hong Kong trip, not before. This morning, he'd even walked in on her singing La Traviata in the shower. "If only I didn't love her so much, none of this would have happened." It was 5:30. And the street was already crowded with traders and secretarial staff on their way home. Since he'd started his new job in the M&A division at Lazard, Andrew often worked till 9 or 10 at night. But this was a Thursday, gym night. Andrew's doctor had emphasized how vital it was for him to exercise regularly. Nothing combats stress like a good game of racquetball. No point being a big swinging dick on Wall Street if your heart gives out at 45. You know what I'm saying? Andrew knew what his doctor was saying, although he couldn't help but question the judgment of anyone who perceived him, Andrew Preston, as a big swinging dick. Maria certainly didn't. Whatever he achieved, however much money he made, it was never enough. Andrew's vintage Aston Martin DB5 was parked in an underground garage, 4 buildings down from his office. The rates were extortionate, but driving to work was one of the few small luxuries he allowed himself. Mindful of his heart, he took the stairs to P4 instead of the elevator, pressed the unlock button on his remote, and jumped into the driver's seat.
"Hello, Andrew."
He was so shocked he almost screamed. Grace Brookstein was crouched low in the back seat. She was holding a gun and smiling.
"Long time no see."
Mitch Connors couldn't believe his ears. "Sir, with all due respect, this is bullshit. We have to reopen the investigation into Leonard Brookstein's death. If we don't, and it came out later that we'd suppressed this evidence..." When Mitch finally untrusted Davy Bucola, the red-faced PI had handed him a USB chip. The information it contained was so explosive, Mitch had printed it out and taken it straight to his boss. "No one suppressing anything," Lieutenant Dubray snapped the file shut. "Frankly, Mitch, I don't understand why you're so hot to start a new investigation when you're making such a mess of the one you're on now. Grace Brookstein's made a fool of you. She's made a fool of this entire department."
"I know, sir, but if her husband was murdered and the inquest criminally mishandled, there's been a major miscarriage of justice."
Dubray scoffed.
"Justice? Give me a break. Lenny Brookstein was an asshole, Mitch, okay? A rich, greedy asshole who took this city for a ride. If someone did whack the old man, they did the world a favor. Nobody cares. Least of all, me."
Mitch was silent. Was Dubray for real? The whole investigation into Lenny Brookstein's death had been a sham. The coroner ruled suicide because America had already passed judgment on its once-beloved son. Lenny Brookstein was a thief, a greedy liar who'd raped the poor and stolen from his own fund. But what if America was wrong about Lenny and Grace? From the very beginning of the investigation, Mitch had conflicting feelings about Grace Brookstein. The initial knee-jerk hatred he shared with the rest of America had rapidly been replaced by a combination of pity and, he might as well admit it, respect. Grace was brave, determined, and resourceful, qualities that Mitch had always viewed as predominantly male. Yet when he'd finally seen Grace Brookstein in the flesh, fleetingly, the day her subway train pulled away at Times Square, the face staring back at him was all woman. Vulnerable, compassionate, kind. In other circumstances, another life, Mitch could picture himself falling for her. "I could save her. We could save each other." He dragged himself back to reality.
Suppose Leonard Brookstein was innocent.
Dupre's eyes widened.
Excuse me?
I said, suppose he was innocent. Suppose someone else took that money.
Like who? The Tooth Fairy?
How about Andrew Preston?
No disrespect, sir, but have you read Bucola's file? Preston had been embezzling funds for years.
Dupre waved his hand dismissively.
Petty cash. Besides, all the Quorum guys were interviewed up the wazoo at the time.
I know the feds aren't always the sharpest knives in the drawer, but do you really think Harry Bain wouldn't have caught on by now if one of them hadn't had that cash?
Your PI's barking up the wrong tree.
Maybe, Mitch conceded.
But shouldn't we at least check out Bucola's leads? The more I look at the Quorum case, the more it stinks.
So stop looking at it. Do your job. Find Grace Brookstein and get her back into jail where she belongs.
Back in his office, Mitch turned off his phone and closed the doors. Did Grace Brookstein belong in jail? He wasn't so sure anymore. He tried to push the thought down, to strangle it, but it wouldn't stop growing, forcing its way up into the sunlight of his consciousness like a weed. It's a put-up job. The inquest, the trial, whole thing. It's all been staged like a scripted reality show. Dupre wasn't interested in the truth. Neither were the Massachusetts cops who'd investigated Lenny Brookstein's death, or the coroner, or the media, or even the FBI. The Quorum fraud was a movie, and America had already cast its villains. Grace and Lenny Brookstein.
No one wanted an alternative ending. Not when they've paid so dearly for their seats and were already halfway through their popcorn.
Dupre had told him to forget Bucola's information.
Delete it. Shred it. Burn it. I don't care. Lenny Brookstein's dead and buried.
But Mitch knew he couldn't do that.
That information would lead him to the truth. With a little luck, it would also lead him to Grace Brookstein.
Andrew Preston gritted his teeth. If he was going to die, he would try to do it with courage.
Everything I did for Maria. You must believe that, Grace.
Grace tightened the cord around his wrists. They'd driven out to New Jersey, to an abandoned barn off the 287 freeway. Outside, it was dark and starting to rain. A cold drizzle dripped through the holes in the barn's roof, soaking Andrew's shirt. The post he was tied to pressed painfully into his back.
Don't tell me what I must believe. Just answer my questions. How much did you steal from Lenny?
I didn't steal from Lenny.
The hard metal butt of the gun slammed into the bridge of Andrew's nose. He screamed in pain.
Don't lie to me! I have proof. One more lie and I will shoot you in the head. Do you believe me?
Andrew Preston nodded. He believed her. If this had been the old Grace, he would have appealed to her compassion. But the old Grace was clearly dead and gone. Andrew Preston had no doubt that the woman in front of him would put a bullet through his brain without hesitation.
How much?
About 3 million altogether. Over a number of years. But I wasn't lying. I didn't steal from Lenny. I took the money from Quorum. It was always my intention to pay it back eventually.
But you didn't.
No, I couldn't. Maria's debts.
He started to cry.
She spent so much she started going to loan sharks. It's an illness with her, Grace, an addiction. She can't help herself. I had no idea how bad things had gotten. Then, one day, some people came to the house. Violent people. Killers. I wouldn't have cared for myself, but they were threatening to hurt Maria. They showed me pictures.
He shuddered.
I won't forget those images as long as I live.
Grace thought of Lenny's bloated, headless corpse lying on a slab in the morgue.
So, you stole from the fund, and Lenny found out.
Andrew hung his head.
Yes, I thought I'd covered my tracks. The SEC was investigating us, but they never caught on. I guess Lenny was smarter than all of them.
And that's why you killed him, so you could keep stealing? Keep paying off these gangsters?
Andrew looked at her with genuine surprise.
Killed him? No way did I kill him. I stole from Quorum, and that was wrong. But I would never have hurt Lenny. He was a good friend to me.
Please.
Grace laughed bitterly.
Lenny knew what you had done. He and John were discussing it in Nantucket. You were scared he was going to fire you or turn you over to the authorities, so you killed him.
She released the safety catch on the gun. Her hand was shaking.
I don't believe you only took $3 million. You took all of it. You stole all those billions and made it look like it was Lenny.
That's not true.
You killed him. I know it was you.
Grace was hysterical. Andrew Preston closed his eyes. At least it would be a quick death.
I wonder if Maria will miss me.
Mitch Connors lay on his bed, reading. Davy Bucola was a bottom feeder, but he was a meticulous bottom feeder. His report was diligently researched. Of course, a lot of the information was hearsay, based on unofficial interviews with staff at the coroner's office or the Nantucket Coast Guard. Less than half of it would have stood up in court, but the overall picture it painted of a wealthy man surrounded by false friends, parasites, and hangers-on rang horribly true. Mitch imagined Grace reading it. If it made him sick, how would she feel wading through the sticky web of half-truths, greed, and deception spun by her nearest and dearest? No wonder she hadn't turned to any of them when she broke out of Bedford. With friends like the Brooksteins had, who needed enemies? The only problem with the information was that there was so much of it. Too many people had the motive and the opportunity to do away with Lenny Brookstein. Mitch thought, Grace is following these leads, just like I am. Where would she go first? Andrew Preston opened his eyes. He'd been waiting for Grace to shoot him, but so far the expected bullet hadn't come. He was surprised to see her cheeks were wet with tears.
I want you to admit it, she sobbed. I want you to say you're sorry.
Grace, I am sorry for what I did, but I didn't kill Lenny, and that's the honest truth. I was in New York the day he died. Remember?
I know you were, and I know what you were doing there. You were paying off a hitman.
Grace reached into her rucksack and pulled out a photograph.
Donald Anthony LeBron. I suppose you're going to tell me you don't recognize him?
Andrew's face drained of color.
No. I recognize him, and you're right. He is a hitman. He works for a